Hello, Mind University listeners. It is Professor Ashley here. You've heard me here and on social media and on YouTube talking about my Kickstarter, Aurora and the Eagle, which you can find by going to www.auroraandtheeagle.com. There's only a few days left, and while we did smash our stretch goal, and I am able to give you this first issue and apply for my American citizenship, if we hit the goal of $10,000, which we are only $2,000 away from, I will be able to begin full production on the graphic novel, which means that you won't just be getting the first issue, you'll be getting Aurora's entire story about joining the Unity League, immigrating to America, and becoming a heroine in her own right. We still have a ton of great script reviews available from people like me and Professor Jason. So if you head over to auroraandtheeagle.com and put your support behind your Mind University professor, I would be forever grateful.
Today we're talking about Billy Batson, a boy who, by speaking the word Shazam,
becomes the immortal elder known as Captain Marvel. Because your geek history lesson on Shazam / Captain Marvel / whatever the hell he's called now is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason, the Big Blue Cheese.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or super complicated history from pop culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. Mm-hmm. And this week we are talking about one of my favorite heroes, Shazam.
Shazam.
Is that how you say it?
Shazam, yes.
I'm going to go with Shazam.
Okay, we're going to go with Shazam. He's one of your favorite heroes.
No, he's not.
I was like, why are you lying to the listeners?
I do like the Shazam joke. It's very funny. That's a Matthew Peterson major spoilers joke. So I like that hero who none of us know anything about. But we're talking about Shazam because there's a little movie about
him. There's a big movie coming out right now called Shazam that is starring the character that used to be known as Captain Thunder, that used to be known as Captain Marvel, that used to be known as the world's mightiest mortal. We are going to be calling him Shazam throughout this podcast, even though I know and I have seen the internet comment several times where people are like, he's called Captain Marvel. Well, legally by copyright, he's not. So we're going to call him Shazam because that's the way they're advertising him now. Although I will bring up the point of the idea that, Ashley, I said this to you once. Mm-hmm. If his name is Shazam, how does he introduce himself? Because as soon as he says his name, he turns right back to Billy Batson. But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
This episode, of course, was suggested by a lot of awesome Mind University students like you listening right now. Queer Femme Romulan, Anthony Russell, at Nightwing underscore TT, and Drew Stern are all the Mind University students that suggested Shazam.
Thank you.
Fair warning, this episode could go very long because this is very complicated. And we have a guest.
Sticking around for the discussion.
Yes, Comic Pop Sal, or Sal from Comic Pop, or the Salliest World's Mortal, however you want to call him.
He's the big green cheese?
I'd say he's the big Jersey cheese.
Well, isn't Jersey the Garden State?
He's the big garden cheese.
So the swag.
Yes. So Sal will be around at the end of the episode. So if you want to hear him, stick around. So we're going to go into the first section of this episode, the 10 Cent Origin.
Yes. And the 10 Cent Origin is the first section of our podcast where Professor Jason is going to lay out all the creators, first appearances, and cool facts that you need to know in case you go to a great DC-themed cocktail party and someone doesn't know who Shazam is.
Okay. So Captain Marvel was published originally by Fawcett Comics from 1939 to 1953.
But Jason, I thought he was a DC hero.
Well, DC didn't, he didn't become a DC character until 1972.
Ooh,
and
boy.
From 1972 to present, he has been a DC character. His first appearance was in Wiz, W-H-I-Z Comics, number 2, cover date is February of 1940. He was created by Bill Parker and C.C. Beck, who is an Illuminary artist.
Mm-hmm.
In the story, his alter ego is actually his full name, is William Joseph Billy Batson. He's more commonly known as Billy Batson, but William Joseph is his full name.
Interesting.
Of course, his species is human. And his team affiliations are the Marvel / Shazam family, the Squadron of Justice, the Justice League, the Justice Society of America, Justice League International, and his partnerships have been with Mary Marvel, Captain Marvel Jr., Mr. Talkie Tawny, we'll get to him, Superman, Cyborg, and many others. And his notable aliases have been Captain Thunder, Captain Shazam, and also at certain points he has just been called Marvel. So his abilities, real quick, because I don't want to go into this too much because this is repeated over and over and over again. His abilities are, he has the wisdom. He has a wisdom ability. He has enhanced intellect, nigh omniscience, knowledge and focus of the gods. He has superhuman strength. He has superhuman stamina, invulnerability, superhuman durability, superhuman endurance, the power over unlimited lightning, immortality, electricity generation, manipulation, lightning, electricity, creation of electrical fields, indomitable will, and superhuman speed.
Cool.
Yep.
He's Superman.
He has a lot of abilities.
Yeah.
Let's go into the meet cute.
The meet cute is the part of the podcast that we stole from Romantic Comedy Writing, where we tell you the first time we met these characters and how cute it was.
Ashley, where did you first meet your favorite character, Shazam?
I first met Shazam. That's a tough question because for me, Shazam is a character I have weird feelings about. I think the first time I was really aware of the character is in Kingdom Come, where he plays a pretty significant role to the denouement falling action of that storyline.
He's almost the villain.
Arguably the villain, yes.
I will tell you this, because before many of our Mind University students bring this up, we are not going to be talking about Kingdom Come because it is an alternate future
way out of continuity.
Reality. But yes, he's a major part of that great DC storyline.
Yeah, and he's it's one of his most impactful stories, I think, as well.
Oh yeah,
because he's not just a Superman analog in that. That was the first time I was really aware of who this character was, which is a deeply confusing introduction to who he is, because the concept of Billy Batson and the wish fulfillment that he represents is very interesting.
Yeah.
But to try and cram that into Kingdom Come, which is already very heady to begin with, not an easy pill to swallow.
You just made me want to read Kingdom Come again.
Do it. I mean, don't even look at the word balloons, just look at the Alex Ross art.
How beautiful.
It's so great. So that was the first time that I was really aware of who Shazam was, and he's interesting to me because he's sort of a character like the Legion of Superheroes or the Fantastic Four, where he enjoys a lot of love and respect from a lot of people, and it's taken me a while to come around to understanding why.
Interesting.
Maybe we'll talk more about that later.
I like Shazam.
I like him just fine. I like Mary better. Where did you first meet Shazam?
Back in the hallowed days of the 1990s, there were these things called magazines, Ashley.
Were they made by wizards?
And one of them was made by a wizard, which is actually very appropriate to our tale.
The wizard name Shazam?
The wizard name magazine. So,
this is very funny.
Wizard magazine used to do these recommendations about series that you should read or series you should check out or issues you should check out. And one of them was a series that was published in the 90s called The Power of Shazam. We will talk about this series quite a bit going forward. This was kind of created and written and drawn by Jerry Ordway, who is an amazing comic book creator. If you don't know who Jerry Ordway is, please go Google him. But Power Shazam was sort of the modern Shazam series. And because of Wizard Magazine, I checked out Power Shazam. I loved it. And that's where I first met Captain Marvel, because at that time he was called Captain Marvel. He was not called Shazam.
Cool.
So there you go. Let's move into the History 101.
The main meat of the lesson, where Professor Jason is going to dive into what I know, and I barely scratched the surface, is a very complicated history.
So everyone out there, this is going to be a geek history lesson quite unlike any other episode we have ever done. The character of Shazam / Captain Marvel / the Big Red Cheese / Shazam is so marred with publication history, lawsuits, creators having fights, creators leaving the book. There's literally no way to tell this episode, to do this episode, without interjecting publication knowledge and stories into this. So buckle up. And get ready. There's going to be a lot of times, this is going to be less a character biography than it is going to be a publication biography, because there's just, it's fascinating how many times this character has changed and rebooted and done other things like that.
Cool.
So we're going to talk about the original Captain Marvel. This is when it was published by Fawcett Comics back in the 1930s. Now, the original the origins of Captain Marvel date back to the First World War, when Wilford Captain Billy Fawcett ran away to join the army for the First World War when he was 16. Now, Fawcett rose quickly to the rank of captain, and after the war, he started publishing bawdy cartoons named Captain Billy's Whiz Bang. Yes.
That's a lot.
It's a very, very 1930s comic series, Captain Billy's Whiz Bang.
It is, yeah.
By late 1939, Fawcett began expanding into a line of comic books, which launched in February of 1940, which is actually the same month that Captain Billy passed away. So Aww. He didn't actually get to see any of the comic books that he created.
Oh, rest in power, Captain Billy.
Mm-hmm. In 1939, Roscoe Kent Fawcett commanded his crew to create a character like Superman, because Superman came out in 1938.
That's right.
The only difference is they wanted this character to have the identity of a boy aged from 10 to 12. Editor Ralph Day turned the product over to writer Bill Parker, who originally wanted to make it about a team of six heroes, each with a different power, led by one superhero called Captain Thunder. Now, Day suggested, instead of having six different characters, how about we combine all those powers into one character? And so Parker complied. Parker's revised idea was given life by C.C. Beck, mm-hmm. who crafted a red-clad superhero who made the face of the hero look like actor Fred McMurray. Now, Captain Thunder first appeared in a sample issue that ran under the title of Flash Comics and Thrill Comics in 1939. Unfortunately, Fawcett found out that they couldn't trademark the titles Captain Thunder, Thrill Comics, or even Flash Comics due to other companies taking those names, primarily National Comics, which would become DC. In February of 1940, the book officially hit newsstands under the title Wiz Comics, Issue 2, and its cover officially renamed the character Captain Marvel. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of the fictional history of Billy, and then I'm going to tell you about a little bit of what actually happens in the first story of Wiz 2. So, when approximately he was 6 months old, Billy's parents were killed in a car crash, and Billy went to live with his uncle, Ebenezer Batson.
Oh boy, I bet he's not nice.
Now, the life with his uncle was very hard. Billy was barely fed, and his uncle always forced him to give him money. The uncle suggested, hey, go out in the streets and steal. Give me money. Instead, Billy got a job as a pencil salesman. Uncle Ebenezer eventually kicked him out of the house, and when Billy was on the street, he suffered from hypothermia and starvation, and he was brought to a hospital where he was given the job as a newsboy. One evening, when Billy was hawking newspapers, a strange, shadowy man in a long coat approached him. He beckoned.
Run, Billy, run!
I know, right? Hashtag creeper. He beckoned Billy to follow him and led him underground into a dilapidated subway station. Soon, a driverless subway car, unlike anything Billy had ever seen, roared to the platform, and the two got on board. The car sped off deeper underground, bringing them to a vast cavern known as the Rock of Eternity. And before Billy saw two rows of statues lining each side of the cavern. Each statue was forged in the likeness of a horrific monster representing the seven deadly enemies of man, or as we would know them later, the seven deadly sins. Actually, can you name the seven deadly enemies of man?
Sloth, That's envy.
Correct.
Avarice.
Greed.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
Sorry, I know them from the Greek tradition.
It's all right.
Sloth, envy, avarice. Gluttony.
Correct.
Wrath, rage, anger.
Yeah, wrath. Correct. Got two more.
Can you give me a hint?
The way you feel about Henry Cavill.
The lust. Telling all my secrets.
And then for the last one, the way you feel about your cat when he poses real well in a picture.
Pride. Yep. that was very good. I guess the answer is I'm like a 7.5 out of 10 in naming.
Yep. So it's pride, envy, greed, wrath, sloth, gluttony, lust.
Yeah.
Okay. At the anterior of the cavern, he found an old man with a flowing white beard sitting on a stone throne. And above him was a large boulder suspended from the ceiling of the cavern by a tiny fraying thread.
Little sort of Damocles imagery going on there.
The old man introduced himself as the wizard named Shazam and told Billy that he had been chosen to be his champion against injustice. He explained that each of these elders would bestow an aspect of their power onto Billy, and all the boy had to do to acquire such power was to speak the wizard's name. Billy spoke Shazam, and a bolt of mystic lightning struck down from nowhere, transforming the 12-year-old boy into a powerful, muscle-bound man.
And it fried all of his internal organs. Yes. And he became a hot dog.
Now, Shazam christened his new champion as Captain Marvel and saluted him. Moments after the Starlight transformation, the thread securing the boulder above the wizard's head snapped, the rock came down, crushing the wizard. Shazam's spirit rose from the debris, telling Billy that his ghost would always be present inside the Rock of Eternity should the hero ever need guidance. And honoring his commitment to the wizard, Billy Batson would become the world's mightiest mortal, called Captain Marvel. Now, Ashley.
Yes.
Shazam is an acronym for each of the powers that he gets.
Yes.
Now, I already told you what most of his powers were, but can you explain the powers and give me the acronym?
Probably not.
Of what Shazam stands for. Do you know what S stands
strength
for?
Strength of Hercules.
That is one of them. That's H.
Oh, so they're not even the first letter?
No. So what it means?
Wisdom of Solomon.
Hold on a second. Let me explain. Slow your roll here.
No.
What the letter stands for is the hero.
Oh, okay.
That he gets the power from, but there he also gets. The powers do not follow the same level.
That's dumb.
So Hercules, okay, so he gets strength from Hercules.
Okay, so the S is strength of Hercules. No, the wisdom of Solomon.
Listen to me. Okay, we're going to go through this.
No, stop. I got it.
No, you're ruining this all. Stop. Let's start at S with Shazam, yeah, and then we'll go through it so our listeners can understand us as well.
So S is wisdom of Solomon.
Yeah, correct.
H is strength of Hercules.
Correct.
A is something of Athena.
Incorrect.
Something of Ares.
Incorrect.
Something of Aphrodite.
Incorrect.
There's then no other A. Speed of Apollo.
Incorrect.
I don't know. I give up. Artemis.
Incorrect.
God damn it.
It is the stamina of Atlas.
Atlas doesn't have stamina. Stamina is the world. Running.
He's holding up the world. He has stamina.
No.
Stamina is also weight training. Z.
Headcanon not accepted. Ability to harass women of Zeus.
Well, power of Zeus. That's something correct. That is correct. Zeus. All right, cool.
I've literally named every A god that I can already think of, and you've told me no for all of them. So just tell me what the second A is.
The second A is Courage of Achilles.
Not a god.
Okay. And the M.
Snakes of Medusa.
You've already said
Mercury,
this.
Mercury, right? Something of Mercury?
Speed of Mercury.
Yeah.
Yes. So there you go. So it's
also Atlas is a Titan, not a god.
So it's Solomon, Hercules, Atlas, Zeus, Achilles, Mercury. There you go. There's the acronym. Now we finally got through that.
Can I actually say something about the origin of Shazam?
Sure.
he was shaking his head like he was going to say no. Podcasting, famously a visual medium. It's interesting because I've not read this original Fawcett Comics origin of Shazam.
Anything.
But seems to be a lot of the way with the Golden Age. I have read a lot of other introductions or reboots or reintroductions to Shazam. They are all this, beat for beat. They're just dressed up a little different.
That's kind of why we're not going to repeat it past this point.
Yeah.
Because it is basically the same origin, with slight differences.
I'm just surprised, like, how deeply, like, down to the subway car. How heavily it's influenced and how much it hasn't changed. And I think that's very interesting.
Well, it's kind of like Superman. Exploding baby from a rocket planet.
Superman, Batman, yeah.
You know, when it's good, it's good.
Sure.
So there's more, actually, in Wiz Comics, too.
Oh, good. Yep. Is this like an anthology comic?
They all were anthology comics back
then. But
it's
a bunch of shorter stories? Cool. Mm-hmm.
So the first story in Wiz Comics also established other parts of Captain Marvel's mythology, including his basically big bad, Dr. Thaddeus Badog Savannah.
Bodog?
Yep. I don't. It's B-O-D-O-G. I don't know if that's how you say
Bodog.
It. Bodog. Bodog's Dr. Bodog Serena.
Bodog Horseman.
So he is a scientist that is out for revenge of the world that has shunned his inventions by, he wants to become the rightful ruler of the universe. Very similar to Lex Luthor. Again, this is a copy of Superman.
Yeah, Savannah also often appears with no hair.
Mm-hmm. Savannah had a creepy look. A petulant attitude. It was he who first called Captain Marvel the Big Red Cheese, and a devious laugh of heh heh heh.
Oh, yes.
He was bald and craggly, and C.C. Beck later said that he based the look on a Long Island pharmacist that he once had.
Oh, boy. Yep. What a treat.
Savannah figured out Billy's dual identity quickly, and many stories involved him finding new ways to stop Billy from saying Shazam.
By harassing a little boy.
Yep. Eventually, Savannah had two children. I don't quite know how to say these because they're fake names. Butia and Magnificus.
We're just good. That's fine. Yeah.
Who later became Captain Marvel's allies against their father.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Now, fun fact: we've moved past Wiz Comics. Of course, there is a brief time where, for a couple months, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. Ashley, who are they?
Lauded comic creators. Joe Simon, one of the creators of Superman. And
no, Joe Simon did not create Superman.
No. No, that's Siegel and Schuster. Yes. They're important Marvel creators.
Joe Simon and Jack Kirby created Captain America.
That's right.
There was a time where they were drawing and writing Captain America by day and drawing and writing Captain Marvel at night.
Oh, really?
At the same time.
I didn't know that. Good for
them. For about 2 months.
Hustle.
Yep. I'm not certain. I couldn't exactly figure out which issues they were.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Jack Kirby and Joe Simon did not want to make it known.
We're not credited. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Also, I imagine those issues are hard to get your hands on.
Now, eventually, Captain Marvel started outselling Superman. And this was a huge, huge turning point in the golden age of comics. Now, the bulk of Fawcett Publications' Captain Marvel stories, there were actually 986 Captain Marvel stories published by Fawcett. They were written mostly by Otto O. Bender.
Oh.
Who is a name that...
Very important creator. Later did a lot of stuff with DC. Mm-hmm. Probably concurrently did a lot of stuff with DC.
Now, Bender's stories often followed kind of a whimsical logic of a children's story, a fairy tale. And his prolific output allowed him to carry over many characters from each of the tales. If fans liked a story about Captain Marvel meeting a certain animal, Bender would just make that animal a recurring character. Because he could write so fast.
You know what? Good for him, and good for him in the golden age of comics, realizing that you can serialize storytelling.
One of these characters that first popped up is Mr. Talkie-Tawny, a recurring thread and foil for the good captain. Ashley, who is Talkie-Tawny?
He's a giant talking tiger.
He is. I love Talkie-Tawny.
I know if you've never read a Shazam story or if you're not as familiar with the character, I know that sounds ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Talkie-Tawny rocks.
Yep.
He is awesome.
Now I'm going to give you Talkie-Tawny's origin.
Oh, please do.
Now, Mr. Tawny first made his appearance in Captain Marvel Adventures number 79 in 1947. We're still under Fawcett Comics at this point.
Uh-huh.
The story is called The Talking Tiger and introduced Mr. Tawny as a humanoid talking tiger who travels from his native India to the United States in hopes of integrating himself into American society. Although he makes every effort to be sociable, and he's very polite, the simple presence of the talking tiger in the city terrorizes the public, leading to Captain Marvel being the only human that will actually talk to him.
He just wants a conversation and a cup of tea.
Yeah, in the first adventure, they never explain how this tiger just talks.
Do they ever?
Later versions, especially in the Power of Shazam series, It is a imaginary friend who Billy and Mary, when they're kids, because they're brother and sister, have a toy tiger.
Yes.
Those
little Calvin and Hobbes action.
Exactly. So the wizard Shazam grants that talking tiger life to be an ally to them.
Yeah, I know. I won't spoil it too much because it's our book club coming up in a few weeks. But I know that in the Shazam Monster Society of Evil, they give him they explain his origin, and he's not imaginary.
Mm-hmm. But Talkie-Tawny, I imagine, talks like this. He walks around and, "Hello, Captain Marvel. How are you? I'm a tiger." So soon, Ashley, we meet Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, the best Captain Marvel.
Who's that?
He is a smaller boy who looks almost exactly...
A younger boy.
Almost exactly the same. He's kind of... It's kind of like when Jason Todd comes around. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he always has a crutch and is always physically disabled, but in modern incarnations... he's always a little, he has like physical injury or he has
a
physical disability.
Okay. But he was always injured.
So he's a younger boy with some sort of physical issue who befriends Billy and will later go on to become the reason that Elvis has his hairstyle.
That's correct. So Captain Marvel saved Freddie Freeman's life by convincing the spirit of the Wizard Shazam to grant him part of his powers. By saying Captain Marvel, Freddie became Captain Marvel Jr., the mightiest boy in the world. And also, technically a character incapable of saying his own name without losing his powers, just like Shazam is right now.
Well, at least they kept the paradox going for him as well.
Yep. And then came the character that Ashley likes the best, Mary Marvel.
I love Mary Marvel.
Who's Mary Marvel, Ashley?
She is Billy Batson's sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets powers, too. And a skirt that we have to heavily shade.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is something we're going to talk about a little bit. Ashley, I want to ask you, when Captain Marvel shows up, when Billy Batson goes, Shazam!
Mm-hmm.
And Captain Marvel shows up, is that Billy or is that Captain Marvel?
I have so many thoughts about this, especially obviously having done a lot of
and we're gonna,
Shazam
once
reading
we get
recently.
Your answer, we're going to circle back to Mary because this directly relates to Mary.
I suspect I know exactly what you are about to bring up. It's interesting. With Billy, I don't think he... I think Shazam is a different person than Billy is.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I think they cohabitate. I think it's sort of like a Trill situation going on. That's a Star Trek reference. But when I look at characters like Mary and Freddy, I do think that's them, even when they've leveled up. So, but that's really an arbitrary question. But it's an important distinction with Billy because...
Well, I will say this. Originally, in the original Fawcett comics, Captain Marvel is a completely different person. It is not Billy.
He's sort of an avatar that Billy carries along.
It's hard to describe.
Yeah.
It's sort of a good spirit or like an elder of the universe that the Shazam gives physical form, that he basically takes adult Billy's body.
Yeah.
And helps Billy out.
This is some real hashtag comic book nonsense.
And Billy sort of goes to like, it's very similar to, hate to say this, the Captain Marvel Peter David run, where it was Genus Vell, Marvel's son, and Rick Jones. And every time they touched the Negabands, the one of them that wasn't on Earth would go to like this weird dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Fawcett comics, it's sort of described that Billy just goes to nothingness.
Nowhere. If I could also put a little asterisk in here as well. I think a lot of Shazam makes more sense when you view it through a mythological lens from which it takes so much of its inspiration. I think Wonder Woman is the same way. It's sort of like in the Iliad when like, Ares comes down and gives all of his powers to, you know, Hector or Achilles or one of the humans. It's kind of like that, except they get a new body at the same time.
Now, the reason why I bring this up is because, one, it directly relates to Mary Marvel.
It's
but really quickly, I want to talk about a piece of research that I discovered. Many comic book creators that have worked on Shazam past 1986 all blame the movie Big for the change in Captain Marvel. Now, Ashley, do you know what the movie Big is?
I've not seen it. Tom Hanks is a kid in an adult body.
Yes, Tom Hanks.
It's like Jack. It's like the Robin Williams movie is like the less good version of that.
Exactly. Big is an amazing movie directed by Penny Marshall, who recently passed away.
Yes, she did.
It's one of the best. It's one of the greatest movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. I think it's really good. Tom Hanks goes to a carnival. He makes a wish at the carnival to be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up as the little kid wakes up as adult Tom Hanks. And then he spends the movie being an adult, basically. Ever since that movie, and many comic book creators blame that movie, Shazam sort of changed to where Billy is still a kid.
Yes.
But in the body.
But before that, and in some of the stuff that's come after that as well, Shazam was like a fully functioning adult.
Yes.
And he operated with a very different personality than Billy. And they just sort of,
they would sort of refer to each other in the third person as separate entities. So anyways, long story short, we come back to Mary Marvel on this because When Mary was transformed herself, when she got her powers, she decided to retain her regular appearance.
Yeah,
she
she's a little girl.
She did not change. She just looks like a little girl. And now she's been aged up a little bit to where she's the oldest.
We've had like teen versions of Mary Marvel.
Yes, but teen Mary Marvel looks no different when she changes. And she just calls herself Mary Marvel.
Also, in some continuities, and this might be a more modern thing as well, Mary Marvel has an all-abiding crush on Shazam. Mm-hmm. And then when she learns that it's Billy, she's really grossed out.
Yes. Now, we're going to talk about Mary Marvel because she is actually very special to the Captain Marvel story. And I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm pretty certain you don't know, but I just want to see in case you do. Why is Mary Marvel the most special Marvel character of the entire Shazam family? Of all the Shazam characters or anything like that?
I don't know.
It's because...
she's the best one?
No, it's because she's a real person. Otto Binder wrote Mary Marvel after his own daughter, Mary.
Oh, that makes me want to cry. Yep. That's so nice. Yep. That's why she stays a little girl.
Yes.
That's why. Because he didn't want to grow her or sexualize her.
He wrote his daughter.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So the original Mary Marvel.
That truly makes me want to cry. That's so sweet.
You're reading Mary Binder.
Which is that's so fascinating because a lot of people like Mary Marvel the best.
Now, interestingly enough, fun fact, Otto Binder's brother, Jack, drew many of the Mary stories.
Yeah.
Now this is, I'm telling you this because tragedy is coming, my friends.
Oh no.
This is, again, I told you this is going to be a Geek History Lesson different than anything we've ever done.
No, please don't tell me Mary Binder died.
We're going to get
horribly.
There. I'm not going to tell you what happens to the Binder family, it directly impacts Shazam.
Oh no.
But you need to know that Mary Marvel is a real person. Okay. So, one of the most memorable Marvel foes, I'm getting this all confused because this is you'll get why I'm getting so flustered with this. There's a story called The Marvel Family Number One.
Mm-hmm.
In it, the trio was pitted against the Wizard Shazam's previous champion, Teth Adam, a.k.a. Mighty Adam, who abused his powers and been banished to a distant star. 5,000 years later, he renamed himself Black Adam and sought revenge before being tricked into saying Shazam by Uncle Dudley and reduced to dust. Now, this is, of course, this is what many people consider to be Shazam's Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Black Adam might be played by The Rock sometime in the future. We don't know.
Supposedly.
Now, Ashley, I just mentioned Uncle Dudley. Who's that?
Don't know.
Uncle Dudley
Sorry.
is a non-powered but similarly attired hero called Uncle Marvel, who is a lovable old fraud who first met the Marvels when he sought out Mary to return to her good deed ledger that she kept, because she kept a ledger of all the good deeds that she did as Mary Marvel. Now, Dudley claimed that he had the same superpowers as the Marvel. He's like, hey, look at me. I'm a Marvel too.
Mm.
And he also claimed to be Mary's long-lost uncle, which would also make him Billy's long-lost uncle, despite the fact that he had no powers and the fact that they eventually learned that he's not their uncle. He endeared himself so much to the Marvels that they accepted him as part of the family and allowed him to wear a costume just like Ben. Why? Because it's the golden age.
Can you ask me again who Uncle Dudley is?
Who's Uncle Dudley?
He's the abusive butthole who put Harry Potter under the cupboard. That's my whole joke.
I was letting the Harry Potter fans get a laugh in there.
I did not know that they had this weird old man who ran around with them.
You know, it's part of the charm of Shazam, and it's part of the charm of Captain Marvel, is that Uncle Dudley is a goofy character. Also, Uncle Dudley is in the power of the Shazam, and I like him. He's a stupid idea, just like Talkie Tawny. Stupid idea.
Talkie Tawny is an awful idea, but actually is awesome. Yeah.
But I love him. I don't know why. They're endearing. They're endearing to me. Soon, we're going to talk about the greatest Shazam story of all time, possibly the greatest Shazam story of all time. Many of Captain Marvel's foes, all of his enemies, Savannah and many of the other ones, gathered into a storyline called the Monster Society of Evil. It was a story that stretched across 25 issues of Captain Marvel's adventures. Now, in it, Captain Marvel battled a massive gathering of foes, including, wait for it, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Hideki Tojo, all brought together by a disembodied voice called Mr. Mind.
Ah, yes.
Several chapters in, It was revealed that Mr. Mime was actually an adorable green alien worm with glasses and a radio around his neck to broadcast his thoughts. After many battles, the world's wickedest worm, that's what they called him in the book, was finally captured and convicted of 186,744 murders.
So Freddy stepped on him.
No, he's actually executed and stuffed. But eventually he became
it.
Yep. Yeah. Now, the Monster Society of Evil is remembered because it set off a lot of ideas that are still in superhero comic books today. Across my research, and as far as a lot of comic book historians know, mm-hmm. there could be other ones out there. This is the first comic book crossover.
Ooh, interesting.
The Monster Society. And it's also one of the first serialized comic book storylines because it took place over 25 issues. Mm-hmm. But soon, Captain Marvel would face his greatest enemy ever. Who is that, Ashley?
Puberty?
Nope. Litigation.
I was on the right track.
Detective Comics, later known as National Comics, National Periodic Publications, and today known as DC Comics, sued Fawcett Comics and Republic Pictures for copyright infringement in 1941, alleging that Captain Marvel was based on their character, Superman.
Because he was.
Because he exactly was.
Yeah.
After 7 years of litigation, the National Comics Publications v. Fawcett Publications case went to trial in 1948. And after the presiding judge decided that Captain Marvel was an infringement, DC was found actually to be negligent in maintaining copyrights of several of their Superman daily newspaper strips. And it was decided that National had itself abandoned the Superman copyright, and so they didn't have a case. National appealed this decision. And then in 1952, Judge Hand declared that National Superman copyright was in fact valid. And Judge Hand did not find that the character of Captain Marvel itself was an infringement, but rather that specific story beats and specific superpowers were infringements. And that would have to be determined at a retrial. He therefore sent the matter back to a lower court for the actual final verdict. Tired of battling DC in court for years, Fawcett agreed to settle the company and stop publishing Captain Marvel comic books. And the terms of the settlement prevented them from resuming publication of any Captain Marvel comic books without DC's permission, which at the time seemed like DC would never give. So at this time, there's no Captain Marvel comic book. Captain Marvel is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And weirdly, though, Captain Marvel didn't go away. See,
what?
He didn't. He was still remembered in pop culture, specifically on the TV series Gomer Pyle USMC. The title character,
oh yeah,
co-opted Captain Marvel's cry of Shazam as his own catchphrase. He says it in every episode. And guess who else kept Captain Marvel alive?
MASH?
The Beatles.
Oh.
They referenced Captain Marvel in their song, The Continuing Story of Bungalow Bill, in 1968's The White Album.
I don't like that song.
So now is the time that we're going to get a little sad.
Oh,
and
no.
Everyone, I'm sorry, but this is a very sad story, but it's very important, Shazam, and we have to tell it. Remember how I told you that Otto's daughter, Mary Marvel, was named after his own daughter, Mary Bender?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one morning, Mary was getting ready to go into school one morning when a car jumped the curb and went into the driveway in front of the school and killed her.
Oh, no.
She was struck dead. Apparently, the Bender family never recovered. Otto never recovered. His wife never recovered. His wife had a breakdown. Otto started drinking and basically drank himself to death, giving himself a heart attack.
Oh, that's so sad.
Otto Bender died in 1974, but not before meeting the character he had written for so many years, because there is an upside to this. Shazam would return in 1973, in February, on a comic book page drawn by C.C. Beck, the other co-creator. Mm-hmm. A young man passed an older fellow carrying a briefcase with the initials OOB. And the young boy said, "Morning, Mr. Bender." And the old man said, "Morning, Billy." Before realizing that he was talking to Billy Batson, who had been missing for 20 years and hadn't aged a day. because Captain Marvel and Shazam was finally back. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. But first, we have to make sure that the Mind University has dodgeball uniforms by thanking our sponsor, Audible. All right, I'm going to talk to you about Audible right now, guys, because I just made you sad, and I got something that's going to make you happy. Audible, if you don't know, is the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet. And now with Audible Originals, the selection has gotten even more custom with content made for members. If you join Audible, you could choose 3 titles every month, one book and 2 Audible Originals that you cannot hear anywhere else. Now, I listen to Audible myself when I'm driving home from work every day. I've recently finished Hotels, Hospitals, and Jails, a memoir by Anthony Swofford. It's a very personal story. I did On Writing by Stephen King, which is a great book. And I'm thinking about jumping into a couple Neil Gaiman books. So you can listen on any device, anytime, anywhere. If you say to yourself, I don't have time to read, well, you have time to listen, don't you? And Audible, you can find the most inspiring minds, the most compelling stories, and it's the best place to listen. Audible is giving our listeners a 30-day trial when you go to audible.com/geekhistory or text geekhistory to 500500 and listen for a change. So if you want more books in your life, you want more stories in your life, Audible can help you. audible.com/geekhistory. Thanks to Audible for sponsoring the episode. Please go check out Audible, because the more of our listeners that do, the more sponsors we can have on the show. And now back to the episode. Ashley, I know I made you sad.
You did make me sad.
But the good thing is that Shazam is back.
Yeah.
Because in 1970, sales of Superman were not great.
Oh, boy.
They were crap.
Thanks, Silver Age.
DC turned to Fawcett and said, hey, you can't do anything with this character without our permission under the terms of the settlement. So how about licensing the character to us and we'll publish it? By that time, famous comic book legend Carmine Infantino,
another great Flash creator,
approached Fawcett about bringing back Captain Marvel. And sadly, DC was like, hey, we want to bring Captain Marvel back. We're going to publish a comic book called Captain Marvel. But they were suddenly stopped from calling any comic book Captain Marvel.
Ooh, can I guess who did it?
Yes.
Marvel Comics.
That is correct. So you will find on the earliest issues of DC, so DC brought back Shazam, and the title on these covers read, Shazam! ! The original Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marvel sent them a cease and desist letter saying that under trademark laws, you can't have that name prominently on the cover. So then they had to change the book to Shazam! The World's Mightiest Mortal. And that is where that catchphrase comes from. Because at this point, Marvel Comics had a character called Captain Marvel. They had a comic book called Captain Marvel. And they basically only did it to steal the name. I think we talked a little bit about this in the Captain Marvel episode.
Yes, and we also talked about this sort of practice way back in our She-Hulk episode, because the only reason they made She-Hulk, and we talked about it in Spider-Woman as well, is because they were afraid DC would do it first.
That's right. So, Ashley, Shazam number one.
Yes.
Was a very popular comic book. It sold very well. And it became one of the first spectator comic books where retailers and fans were buying up multiple comics.
Oh, now, speculation.
Now, Ashley, you worked in a comic book shop.
I did.
Please explain, what is spectator comics or spectator copies?
Yeah. The worst thing, and I hate it. So when a comic book comes out and it's a big hit, there's a big creator behind it, there's a mistake in it, speculators come in, and speculators are people who usually don't have any interest in comics. They don't buy comics regularly, and they attempt to buy up as many copies as cheaply as possible before the retailer realizes what's going on. In modern times, usually in order to flip it on eBay or bring it into their own store or get it signed, hold on to it for a while, things like that. We called them speculeeches because they're always very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
In LA in particular, there are often people who are scouting because they want to know the new hot series that their EP at the studio could buy up. So, for instance, the best example that comes to mind for me personally is when Mark Miller's Chrononauts was coming out. They announced 2 days before it hit shelves
that it was sold.
Yeah. The rights were sold. So we had so many people coming in trying to get it. And when that happens, in order to stop people from doing that, you either mark up the cover price, you leave it low for your regulars, and you work there long enough, you know who your regulars are, or they pull it or whatever, and you limit the number of copies they can buy, and people get aggro about it. People will wait for the shift change to try and come in and buy more.
So people will wait for the shift change?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
You'll see them come in every couple hours.
They'll just circle the block?
No, they'll just come in and see if there's different people working or if someone's on break. That's often why when you go into comic book stores, they'll ask you for your name and they want to hook you up with an account is to prevent things like this. A more modern example, I guess, or a more contemporary example is like when Naked Batman happened.
Oh, Batman Damned.
Yes. I couldn't remember what that title was because I didn't read it because it sounded bad. When that happened, there were a lot of people trying to buy up those copies because they were instantly worth, as soon as we knew they weren't getting reprinted, $40, $50. So if this is one of the first or the first, at least the first that we know of,
as far as
speculator comics, that's fascinating.
In my research, a lot of people, again, because you know, you don't know, but a lot of creators, a lot of comic book historians
point to this
as the first speculator comic.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is interesting. Shazam.
Because I don't know. Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head if that issue is worth very much.
Okay,
but
so,
I know Wiz number 2 is like, that's a holy grail for collectors.
Fun fact, I found an interview where Mark Waid, creator Mark Waid, who has been a guest on our show, amazing comic book creator.
And an avid collector.
Yet an avid collector. He said that he bought 3 copies of this comic, Shazam
Mark,
number 1.
Mark, you're part of the problem.
Because everybody was thinking that it was going to blow huge because Fawcett was so big.
And that was before the image boom where we all learned comics are worthless.
Exactly. And in this interview, he said that now his issues were probably worth $3.50 each.
Which is probably more than he bought them for, but it's not the kind of return that you're hoping.
Yes.
Fascinating. Yeah. I'm glad that you knew that.
Yeah.
So don't buy it. Buy Wiz number 2.
Yes. So it's very interesting that Captain Marvel, again, probably the first superhero crossover of all time, and now the first speculator comic.
Wow, damn. Shazam, you more impressive than I thought you was going to be.
Now, the first issue of Shazam revealed that Captain Marvel, along with Mary, Captain Marvel Jr., and most of the supporting cast, including Talking Tony. The voice has changed every time. Were trapped by Dr. Savannah and his children in a globe of suspendium. Yep. Like, okay. Like unobtainium. Yeah. For 20 years.
I mean, not quite that bad.
Along with the Savannahs themselves. Finally freed, they adjusted surprisingly well to the new times, the 1970s, and set about fighting crime again.
Billy loved bell bottoms.
Exactly. It was just like old times. By the second issue, it was revealed that Mr. Mind had also survived his trip of execution and being stuffed, and Dr. Savannah's reincarnation machine would restore the 5,000-year-old evil Black Adam from ancient dust to hate again.
Okay.
But the biggest coup of having this title back was that C.C. Beck came back to the book.
Wow.
So they got C.C. Beck for this book. C.C. Beck, after the Shazam comics had folded, had basically just gone into commercial art, and he had unsuccessfully shopped a Talkie Tony newspaper strip to syndicates with Otto Binder, and nobody wanted it. And they also reunited on a short-lived Fat Man, the Human Flying Saucer that also was unsuccessful.
Jesus.
Now, a number of DC's best young writers were paired with Beck on Shazam, and you're going to recognize some of these names. E. Nelson Bridwell was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Denny O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very luminous, to me, Elliot Magan was applied. Now, Elliot Magan says, and I'm quoting him, "The first story I did for Shazam was the Sunny Sparkle story. That was in issue number 2. And the thing I liked about it was that you could do things you couldn't do with the so-called realistic superheroes. Sunny Sparkle was a guy who was the nicest guy in the world. And he was so nice that the minute you looked at him, you wanted to give him things. At some point, little old ladies would just stuff jewelry in his pockets. And once a week, he'd have a truck back up to his house so he could load it up with things people had given him so he could donate it to the Salvation Army. And at some point, a criminal walks up to him with a satchel full of cash and stuffs it in his pockets. And Captain Marvel helps him track down these criminals who had just given him loot because he's so nice." So it was interesting that they had decided to sort of keep this silliness and golden age-ness of the 70s, because 70s are starting the Bronze Age.
Yeah.
So
it's also funny to me to think that in the 70s, like, through a contemporary lens, that they thought this, like, Batman was more grounded.
Yeah. Now, there is a problem with the Shazam series. C.C. Beck, not only being an old man, was also a curmudgeon.
Oh, good. I'm already excited.
And he fought with every single writer he worked with.
There's a TV show in that.
Yes. The conflict between Beck and the other creators reached a boiling point when he refused to draw the script for Shazam number 10.
Oh, boy. Please tell me you know what happens at Shazam number 10.
I don't. But okay. Basically, it is a lighthearted fair by Magan with Captain Marvel helping to... He's basically helping some talking alien vegetables called Salad Bin.
Okay, great. That's all I needed. Yep. Yeah.
DC had enough of CC Beck, thought he wasn't worth it, and they fired him.
Aww.
So he only made it 10 issues into the new run of Shazam.
You know what? That's more than some modern artists make it.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask you about this, because what do you think about the idea? There is a school of thought that the original characters, they're the original creators of certain characters, are kind of the only ones that can really write their characters.
I heartily disagree.
Now, some say that some people have stayed too long. There's a sort of situation with this with J.K. Rowling and Fantastic Beasts. But there's also the other side of this that I kind of believe that I think George Lucas is the only person that can write Star Wars.
Perhaps.
Now, what do you feel about this? What do you feel like? Do you think having the original creators of a character is worth it, needed? I mean, let's just talk here.
I don't. And I especially don't think after a significant amount of time has passed. And once...
It was at least 20 years for CC Beck.
Uh-huh. And once that thing has hit a certain status, like with Star Wars. I mean, I'll say this as well, because a lot of the people who are listening are part of Crisis Club.
Sure.
We're talking about George Perez and Marv Wolfman's Crisis on Infinite Earths. That's Wolfman and Perez at their peak. And we said this there. For my money, Wolfman and Perez, the greatest creative team.
Sure.
And particularly when they're working together. Mm-hmm. And in one of our, we did reference that they, that Marv Wolfman has gone back and told other stories.
In Crisis.
Decades later, yeah. Set during this time. And you know what? They're bad.
They're not good.
They're really bad. And again, like I love, respect, admire these men. Marv Wolfman has a contemporary Raven series. He created Raven. It's bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't agree that only the creator can do it. But I do think there is something to finding someone who is not too precious about the material that they are making. Now, that is a little ephemeral, difficult thing to understand. Perhaps that's where I would take issue with contemporary Star Wars, is that people are not afraid to push boundaries and challenge. And that's why you want younger creative teams or new writers or people with unique perspectives to come onto your characters. You know, again, for my money, are Bob Kane and Bill Finger the greatest the greatest Batman stories? No.
You know,
but you have to have respect for those starting blocks.
You know,
of course.
I think the argument I think you made, which is very interesting, is I feel that in comic books the answer is no, but in other mediums maybe the answer is yes.
Perhaps
because the serialized nature of comic books maybe seems to be against that idea. Because Joel Siegel and Jerry Schuster, not the greatest Superman team. So that's interesting. Okay, cool.
Good question.
Shazam made it to issue 35 before it was canceled.
Well, again, better than a lot of contemporary comics.
But luckily there was something else to keep Shazam alive. It was a Shazam TV show.
There was a Shazam TV show?
There is a Shazam TV show. Actually, it's one of the few options you have in DC Universe. So Filmation, who would later, you know, become a huge cartoon series, they had a hit Saturday morning shows series called Shazam, which ran from 1974 to 1977. It was on CBS, and it was paired with the superhero show Isis. Now, the low-budget series depicted a teen Billy Batson, played by Michael Gray, traveling around the country doing good deeds with Mr. Mentor, played by Les Tremaine, turning into Captain Marvel to solve whatever crisis had erupted that week. Now, Jackson Bostwick, he played the good captain. And a lot of people have a lot of fondness to that series. I have seen that show. It comes off as creepy uncle crossing the country, in a Winnebago. It just does not come off as it does not age well.
Cool.
I'm just going to say that.
That's fine.
There's also a great, if you want to watch one of the funniest YouTube clips of all time, there is a sequence from this show where Captain Marvel chases down a plane and he like runs after the plane and he grabs the tail and he tries to slow it down, and this is like some of the most ridiculous special effects you've ever seen.
I'm gonna make a note of that so that I can be sure to share it on all of our socials.
Captain Marvel stopping a flying plane. It is ridiculous.
I'm also gonna share a picture of Mary Binder if I can find one.
Oh, please do. That would be great. Now, eventually, Captain Marvel would connect to the DC Universe proper. He would meet all of the characters, get to know them, have a burger, have a beer, but
really,
mainly, he got to connect to them because of a storyline called Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh, I'm so glad I just brought it up.
Ashley,
mm-hmm.
What is Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Crisis on Infinite Earths is, I guess, not the first crossover event ever, according to this lesson. Crisis on Infinite Earths is in 1985. DC was like, we have so many universes. We only need one universe. So the Anti-Monitor ate them and farted one out.
Yes. Now, this, of course, we're talking about it over on our Patreon, patreon.com/Jawin. We're talking about Crisis Club. We're talking about every single series. And, you know, you can learn more about it over there. So, after Crisis on Infinite Earths, DC decided to launch Captain Marvel again. And writer-artist Jerry Ordway was given that assignment. And he wrote and painted the 1994 hardcover graphic novel, The Power of Shazam. Now, before this, Shazam was sort of in Justice League International, mm-hmm. a couple of Justice Leagues.
He painted it as well.
He was sort of around. It's great. Jerry Ordway is an amazing artist. And Power of Shazam proves that he's a great writer. Set in a retro-styled Fawcett City.
Love it.
I love it. The graphic novel tied Black Adam to the deaths of Billy Batson's parents for the very first time. And it pitted the young hero, again with Billy's personality in his superhuman form, against Adam and Savannah. The book was a surprise hit and won the best graphic novel for the Comic Buyer's Guide fan poll of 1994.
Wow.
The Power of Shazam was so successful that it was able to spin off an ongoing monthly series with Jerry Ordway wrote and art by himself and a variety of collaborators. He didn't draw every issue, but Peter Krause and Dick Giordano drew some of the issues.
Two other legends.
The series ran for 47 issues with a few annuals. Jerry Ordway said, and I quote, "The only direction I was given for the series was to integrate it into the DC universe somehow and take it to the next level. The good part was that they let us create our own little corner of the DC universe with Fawcett City and its heroes. It's a quirky, golden agey, and I'm going to say it right now, best Captain Marvel series ever."
And it's interesting. A lot of the things that you're bringing up about the series also seem to be what you really like about mm-hmm. Astro City.
Yes.
Which I think is just an interesting correlation, knowing you and your taste.
Well, the interesting thing is that it really does. This is the best Captain Marvel series to make me believe why Captain Marvel belongs in the DC universe. Mm-hmm. Even though Jerry Ordway is one of the few creators that says, like, Captain Marvel should be in its own separate universe. Because again, when he was first introduced in the DC universe in the Shazam series, mm-hmm. he was actually set on Earth S. So that was the Shazam's world.
Hot take. You think he should not be in DCU Prime?
Agreed.
Proper Earth-1?
I don't think he should be in the DC universe. So some of the stories that happened during the Power of Shazam is that Mary Marvel is introduced as an adult instead of our traditional teenage form.
She looks gorgeous, mm-hmm. too.
And she insisted on sharing the name of Captain Marvel with her brother. She was like, don't call me Mary Marvel. I'm Captain Marvel.
Good for her.
Captain Marvel Jr. resented being called Junior all the time. And he needed a name that he could say without calling down the magic lightning.
Yeah.
Because Captain Marvel has how he does it. So he renamed himself CM3. Kind of question.
Oh, no. That's bad. Yep. That's a very 90s choice.
So Jerry Ordway wrote all of the stories for the series in one annual. And he actually painted all the covers. All the covers
Very
are painted.
Impressive.
They're amazing looking covers. Go Google, check out the Power of Shazam. So basically after this, the Captain Marvel family kind of disappeared again, popping up in JSA. There's a mm-hmm. great storyline with Captain Marvel and Stargirl.
Oh,
Ashley's
I love
a big fan
it
of it.
So, I'm literally rereading it right now.
You want to give a little bit of a taste of like what's going on in that storyline?
Sure. And that is, for my money, the best JSA story series, I guess.
I'll tell you this, and I've said this on this podcast before. JSA, one of the greatest ongoing DC comic books of all time.
Yes. It is what is often referred to as the Geoff Johns JSA, even mm-hmm. though he's not even the first writer on it, but that's fine. Courtney, a.k.a. Stargirl, is part of the JSA. She's about 13 here. Billy Batson's about 10.
I think Billy Batson's 12 at this time.
He's a bit younger than mm-hmm. her. They draw her very much like a young woman. They draw Billy very much like a child. So you can understand where that infatuation might come from. Billy develops a crush on Courtney. However, most of the people in the JSA don't know that Shazam and Billy Batson are the same person.
They see adult Captain Marvel flirting with Courtney.
Yeah, and it's so cute to read because you know how a young boy mm-hmm. acts, but everyone who doesn't know that it's Billy reads it as deeply creepy, and there's a lot of drama that spins out of that.
There's a great scene where Jerry Ordway. Where
Jerry Ordway shows up and is like, back off, Billy.
Jay Garrick, yeah, yeah. who in my head is now Jerry Ordway.
I can't accept it.
Jay Garrick basically tells Billy to cut that crap out.
Yeah, it's truly epic. I mean, there's a ton of other amazing stuff that happens, but like I got sold on reading JSA because one of my former bosses told me about that storyline, and I was like, yeah, I want to read that.
Oh, man.
It's so good.
I love it. I have all the on device. It's so amazing. So basically, except for JSA, there really wasn't a Shazam series until 2007's Shazam, The Monster Society of Evil, written by luminary Bone creator Jeff Smith.
A.K.A. This month's book club.
That's what I was going to talk about. That's why we're talking about it. So if you guys are interested in this, geekishlesson.com/book club. We're reading that in a future issue a couple weeks down the line. 3 weeks. I'm not certain.
What is time?
Exactly. What is time? It's a circle. Anyways.
It's a donut.
It's a donut. That's correct. So we are going to be reading that tale. It basically retells Captain Marvel's origin and pitting them against Savannah and Mr. Mime with a few twists. And if you want to be a part of that, read that book, go to geekishlesson.com/book club.
And you should read it because it's my favorite version of Talking Tawny.
It's actually a great Shazam
it's
book.
It's so good.
Shazam.
It was one of Jason's choice, but we'll talk more about that in
exactly.
the episode.
So after Infinite Crisis, Ashley, what's that?
Infinite Crisis is the one where Superboy punches a hole in the universe. Because
Superboy Prime.
Sorry, I knew it as soon as I said it. I was like, the bad Superboy, Superboy Prime.
So Shazam was killed. This is the Wizard Shazam. Was killed by the Spectre during the Day of Vengeance event. And the Rock of Eternity was also destroyed, spreading many ancient and evil magics across the world. With help from Zatanna and other heroes, Captain Marvel re-imprisoned the seven deadly sins and rebuilt the Rock of Eternity. And then came my favorite Shazam story, The Trials of Shazam. It is a 12-issue maxi series written by Judd Winnick and illustrated by the amazing Howard Porter for the first 8 issues, and then art by Mauro Casciole for the remaining 4. Now, The Trials of Shazam featured Captain Marvel, now with a white costume and long white hair, taking over the role of the Wizard Shazam under the name Marvel, while the former Captain Marvel Jr., Freddie Freeman, attempts to prove himself worthy to become Marvel's champion under the name Shazam. Now, I'm not going to tell you any more about this story because I want you to read it, and we are going to talk about this more in the later, but basically, Marvel says to Freddie, I can't just give you the power. You have to prove yourself worthy to Solomon and Zeus and Achilles and Alice.
And remember how we talked about the themes of Greek mythology? Mm-hmm. This is all like the trials of
Hercules.
That's right. It is a trope Jason really likes.
I love it. And they're republishing it in a trade paperback very soon. I think it's going to come out like next month. This is my favorite. Now, fun fact, this is the book that Howard Porter was drawing when he injured his hand and was sidelined from drawing comics for 2 years.
Didn't he also get injured in a car accident?
No. No. He actually cut his hand on a piece of glass.
Oh, I didn't know.
But what happened
is... He became a bus driver
because he could not put enough pressure on a pencil to draw comics. Now, thankfully, we're very happy that Howard Porter made it back. He's one of my favorite comic book artists of all time. I've met him a couple times in person. I am so happy that...
And he's crushing it at DC right now.
He's drawing Flash right now.
It's
so
awesome.
Good. And it's still my hope. He's a very busy man. We actually have reached out to him a couple of times. We're still trying to get him on the show. We will get him on the show sometime.
We will get him on the show. And I'm putting this out in the universe. We will get him on a comic. Or a cover.
Ooh.
We're going to get him for something.
Yeah, we actually reached
out. What's that DC exclusive?
We actually reached out to him for Jupiter Jet, and he was too busy. But we're very thankful. This is the reason why he doesn't finish the book, is because he injured his hand in the middle of this book.
Yeah, it's not that he can't hit deadlines.
No.
And he's not a grumpy old man.
No. Go check out his Flash right now. It's amazing. So then we get to the new 52. What's that, Ashley?
Barry Allen missed his mommy, so he ran back in time and reset the timeline and ruined everything, and everyone got more lines on their costumes, and we called it the New 52. Everyone had only been a hero for 5 years, except Batman and Green Lantern.
Yes. So this is basically the version that the movie is going to use. So Billy made his debut in the New 52 in the form of backup stories in Justice League. The story is called The Curse of Shazam. It's written by Geoff Johns and drawn by Gary Frank.
Which is why it will be used in the movie.
This is technically where Billy is renamed Shazam, even though the Trials of Shazam named Freddy Shazam first, but this is technically where it first happened.
Look, he's just like the Flash. He's taking all the good parts of his legacy character and claiming them for himself.
That's right. Now, in this, Billy is an orphan, and he's one of the older children living in a foster home, and he gets adopted by foster parents named the Vasquez. Now, Billy arrives at the Vasquez's and meets Mary and Freddie Freeman, as well as Pedro, Eugene, and Darla. Billy sneaks out to visit his favorite tiger, Mr. Tawny, at the zoo. He's just a normal tiger. And he's followed by by Freddy. Billy runs away from some bullies to stop them from beating up Freddy. He runs into a subway. He gets onto a magical train. He opens his doors. And hey, look, he's at the Rock of Eternity. Sound very familiar?
Also, we've seen this version in an animated movie. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember which one it is right now.
He meets Justice League War.
There you go.
He meets the wizard. The aging wizard claims to be the last of his brethren, the others murdered by his prior champion, Black Adam, and explains to Billy that he needs a new champion. He becomes Shazam and fools around with his powers with Freddy. Eventually, he has to fight Black Adam. And in the conclusion of Curse of Shazam, Black Adam holds Billy's adoptive family hostage, demanding him to relinquish the wizard's full powers to him. Billy, not wanting to cause any more injury, agrees, says the magic word, and instead of transferring his magic to Black Adam, it splits off into his adoptive family, granting each of the children the powers of Shazam. Now, it is hinted, yet not confirmed, that each kid is given a power somewhat related to the pre-52 Shazam gods, like Eugene can communicate with machines, resembling the wisdom of Solomon. Pedro feels like he could carry the world, like the strength of Hercules. Darla receives super speed akin to the speed of Mercury, and then that's their, like, focus power.
I think that's cool.
So the six Shazam kids team up to take down Black Adam, and they do. And that's basically kind of, we saw Shazam a little bit in Trinity War, but until the new Shazam series, that's basically all we've seen of Shazam.
Yeah, and we're not going to talk about what is currently being published.
But I will say this, I think that splitting off the powers into the family is one of the most genius ideas to do with Captain Marvel as well, to create a Shazam family.
Do you feel like it is a redux of creating the Green Lantern spectrum?
No, I think other items in the current Shazam comic book are more like that.
Interesting.
Which I will not spoil in case you read that.
Just because to me, when I hear that and when I know that this is a Geoff Johns story, I'm like, cool, you did that.
A little bit.
And I like this idea.
They are multicolored.
I don't take an issue with this idea or how it's employed or having a diverse Shazam family. I think all that is fine, but it does sound like... It just sounds similar. Thematically similar is all.
Now, before we get into the recommended reading, I have to tell you all, I wrote a book. Yes, I did. It's called Super Soldiers, A Salute to the Comic Book Heroes and Villains Who Fought for the Country. You might have seen me. I announced it on Twitter, announced it on Facebook and everything like that. My book, guys, it's a nonfiction book, and each chapter revisits military comic book characters and compares them to my personal stories from my time in the Army. Now, I describe superhero soldiers from DC Comics, Marvel Comics, independent comics, lesser known characters from time. Every branch is represented. It's kind of like Geek History Lesson in written form with a lot of my personal stories mixed in. Now, if you don't know, books live and die on pre-order. So if you could go, please, to Amazon and pre-order my book, Super Soldiers. It's just $9.99 for the ebook. And I just currently looked. There's actually a deal. It's now $12 for the physical copy. And it's 236 pages of awesome. But you don't have to take my word of it. Check out the quote from an advanced reader who's a comic reader. The quote is, "Not all heroes wear capes, but some do. Jason Immonen's Super Soldiers is a brilliant examination of fictional service enlisted men in very real wars. A topic near and dear to my heart, one chapter in, you'll realize that Immonen's words are all heart." And that was a quote given to me by Mitch Garrods, co-author of Mr. Miracle and the Sheriff of Babylon and guest of this podcast.
That's right.
So there's a link in the description of this podcast. You can find it there. You can find it on my Twitter. Please go pre-order Super Soldiers. It's released June 15th. I'm very proud of it. Ashley has read the book.
I was the first person to read this book. Mm-hmm. And I said this online, and I truly mean it from the bottom of my heart, whether Jason and I knew each other or not. This is an awesome book. You want to read it.
Oh, thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome.
So please go pre-order my book, and I hope you enjoy it, and thank you. Thank you so much. Speaking of other books, let's go to recommended reading.
Yes, lads. Recommended reading is where if you liked this lesson, if you want to know some more about Shazam and check out some of Jason's favorite stories, you go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. You click on the widget. You take on over to Amazon. After you buy Jason's book, you add one of these to your cart, and you read some Shazam, and a little bit of support at no cost to you comes back our way to help us keep all of our seven deadly sins under control here at the Mind University.
And we got some good reading here. Some really good reading. Number one, The Trials of Shazam. It's the best Shazam story of all time. It is the story of Freddie Freeman becoming Shazam. It's the first Shazam story that I ever read that shook up Shazam.
Nice.
Because Shazam kind of gets stuck in the past of the 1940s.
Well, that's what happens to characters
it's
in comics.
It's really, really great. If you click on this link on this one, you're going to notice that the trailer is not out yet. Now, it could be out, future people, if you're listening.
Hello.
But at the time of this recording, it's not out yet, but it's going to come soon.
It's a pre-order.
I'm going to buy it because they have not reprinted this trade in years, and I want a physical copy of this book. The second one is Shazam by Geoff Johns. Now, this is the Curse of Shazam backup, as we told you. It's basically what the movie is going to be based on.
Yeah.
It is exactly the story of the movie. So if you go see the movie, and you're like, I want more Shazam, this is the best one to read, although you're going to see a lot of repeated things. And the third one is Shazam, The Monster Society of Evil by Geoff Smith. This is also one of the best Shazam storylines of all time, primarily because of Geoff Smith. This is Ashley's favorite Shazam story,
it is,
I believe.
Yeah.
And it's also part of our book club, so you can get a triple whammy there. Now, you might be like, Jason, you talk so much about The Power of Shazam by Jerry Ordway. Why the hell is this not the recommended reading? Sad fact, folks. DC never reprinted The Power of Shazam.
And you know what? I mean this truly. If you love a story like this, or you were interested in a story like this, and you can do one of two things. You can buy the single issues, which we will not have in our recommended reading. I'm sorry, but you can buy the single issues, bind them yourself.
Yeah.
That's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. That's something that Jason and I are both into doing.
I've actually considered doing it for the series.
You can also tweet, email, tell the people who work for DC Comics that you want it. If enough people do that, they will reprint it.
My actual hope is that with the success of the movie, they will reprint it. But they've only reprinted the original four-issue graphic novel, the one that launched. But they've never, never fully collected
the whole series,
The Power of Shazam. But I want those 40 issues. That's what I want. You could do it in three trades. You really could.
Or an omnibus.
Or you could do it in it would be a very tiny omnibus, actually, with only 40 issues.
Well, or an absolute. But, you know, you could do it in that premium format, and I think people would buy it.
I think people would buy it, too. So, but that's a sad thing. All right, so now we're going to go to the discussion. And this time in the discussion, we have a very special guest, a comic book luminary, a person that you have heard before on this podcast before that you really like. We're talking about Sal from Comic Pop, the YouTube channel Comic Pop. He's a great comic book nerd. He's a great friend of ours. And now we're going to talk to him about Shazam. Hey, Sal, welcome back to Geek History Lesson.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we've been talking this entire episode about Shazam, Captain Marvel, Billy Batson, the Big Red Cheese, whatever you want to call him, whatever his name is now. So I want to know, from you, I consider you to be a comic book expert.
Oh, okay. I'll take it.
And
everyone is running to Twitter to agree or disagree right now.
Oh, everyone's disagreeing.
I want to know, do you think Shazam should be a part of the DC universe, the DC Comics universe, or should he be in his own separate pocket since he originally didn't come from the DC universe? What are your thoughts on this?
That's actually a really good question. And it's very intriguing to me because, like you said, he does start as a Superman ripoff for all intents and purposes, and he didn't exist against the DC universe. And in fact, I found over the years that I've read comics, whenever Shazam or Captain Marvel come up, heretofore referred to as Shazam, I've never really given him much regard. And I think it's because I've always been looking at him as like a Superman ripoff, even though he is demonstrably different. Like, Superman does not become a little boy. He doesn't have like all these magic powers.
But imagine if Superman did.
Right. Imagine if Superman,
that's kind of weird, sorry,
with like little Clark Kent. I think that would actually really hurt the character. But like,
yes, I agree.
But I think it actually probably might help elevate him, because then you can do all the Superman allegory stuff that people try to do nowadays, or have been trying to do since, I want to say, like the 80s, with, you know, Superman allegory type characters or Superman deconstruction type characters. But it's just straight up Superman. I mean, do you remember Prime?
Yes, that was the Ultraverse Captain Marvel ripoff. And that's one of these things, is that there are multiple Shazam ripoffs. There is Prime, Supreme.
Yeah, Supreme. Miracle Man, if you want to get really like dark with it.
There's actually, fun fact, everyone listening right now, Alex Ross just yesterday released a giant painted poster called The Legacy of Shazam, or earlier this week, excuse me, and he put into it every version of Captain Marvel or every Captain Marvel ripoff character.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of like 60 characters.
Yeah, it's a lot. which actually I didn't expect to see. I really didn't like imagine all those characters, but when you look at it, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But back to your point about Prime.
Oh, but Prime, he existed kind of like in a universe with other characters, like with other superheroes. And I think he kind of worked as the Superman of the Ultraverse. because it's so different and because there was no one else like Prime in the Ultraverse. And as a result, like, he could be interesting. I mean, I don't know about anyone in Ultraverse being interesting, but it, you know, didn't
Watch
survive.
It. Nightman, man. Hey.
That's fair. I mean, I was always a Ghoul fan myself. But
Well, the interesting thing about that as well is think about Mark Miller's Superior, which is a giant Shazam ripoff. He's totally. Only in his own universe, doesn't connect over. But I actually think that story works because there are no other superheroes in that universe. Now, the reason why I wanted to ask this question to you is there are several big name creators out there. Mm-hmm. Jerry Ordway, who has probably one of the longest runs on Shazam with the Power of Shazam title.
Yeah.
Mark Wade agrees with this. A bunch of other creators all think Shazam should not be in the DC universe. He needs to be in his own pocket for the character to work.
I think I agree with them, honestly. I think that would actually help the character a little bit because he's always going to be in the shadow of anyone remotely in his power level and above his popularity level.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about some of the stories where Shazam has crossed over into the DC universe. I mean, most notably, Geoff Johns basically made him a member of the Justice League.
Yeah, and relegated him to basically like Bumblebee status of like stay and guard the base with Cyborg. Like he never really does anything of note outside of any Shazam-centric Justice League arcs. Like from my recollection or knowledge of like the Geoff Johns run of Justice League, Shazam doesn't really contribute anything of note or of interest to that team.
You're right. He's basically only the person on the team that is strong enough to punch Superman, especially in that storyline Trinity War. But overall,
or stronger than Superman as needed.
Yes, exactly. Right. But that's about all he does. And I guess let's talk about this. What do we think? What do you think, Sal, a Shazam story needs? Like, what are the base elements that you need a Shazam story to have? Because for me, a Shazam story always comes down to child versus adult. That's kind of the base for me. It's that child wonder versus adult responsibilities. And you lose a lot of that, I think, when you do bring Shazam into a DC universe, because the DC universe is mainly only going to interact with Shazam as Captain Marvel or as an adult. What do you think the base elements need to be?
I think definitely leaning into the child thing, because that's the interesting part of his character. I mean, outside of him just being a Superman allegory, you know, the thing that separates him besides the magic element, which is literally just window dress. I mean, like, Superman is magic. If you try to delve into the science of Superman, you know, it's like it's just all magic anyway. Like, it's just you called it science because it's a yellow sun versus a red sun. Like, none of that makes any sense scientifically speaking. But because we're going to say Superman's origins are cosmic based and from another planet and he's an alien, you know, he's different from Shazam because Shazam gets his powers from like gods. But that's a big element, is the magic angle. But the thing that makes him human and the thing that makes him, I think, relevant to people who want to read Shazam is the kid angle. You got to really lean into the Billy Batson part of, like, I guess he would be like the best kind of Shazam story for me would be Shazam representing adolescence and adulthood. And, you know, like it's funny, actually, as a person, you know, who is in their like, 20s, 30s, it's like the imposter syndrome of like, am I an adult? What does that mean? I kind of feel like I'm just kind of pretending. That could be a really rich place to explore Shazam, because it's literally Billy Batson pretending to be an adult. And that's the kind of, like, I think reality you can explore with that character that makes him interesting for a reader, like from just a fan standpoint. Because otherwise, just like, oh, Shazam punches another big bad guy and he can fly. Like, that's cool, but there's dozens of characters that can do that also. You know, what makes them special?
What do you think about the more recent developments with Shazam over the last 10 years or so to lean him more into the magic and sort of make him, even though he has a wizard that's also named Shazam, and,
right,
you know, he's sort of kind of become a wizard a little bit. What do you feel about that development?
I think it's smart because it just further differentiates him. It doesn't work for me because I'm not really magic oriented. Like for me, I'm like when the more magic he gets and the more they like really talk about like the Solomon Hercules Atlas stuff, I'm kind of like my eyes kind of glaze over and I'm like, whatever. Like, okay, not Superman. You go do whatever magic thing you're going to do. But like I know a lot of people who love magic and love sorcery and wizards and the whole fantasy element of that character or in general. And I think if you were to really push the character in that direction, you can actually probably recapture a whole group of new fans who are, you know, really interested in that kind of topic.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sal. Well, I think this conversation has been magic. I'm going to say
that. Thank you.
So let's let our listeners know where they can find you. If they don't know where to find you, they should find you because you have amazing conversations just like this every single day on your YouTube channel. Where can they find that?
Well, they can go to youtube.com/comicpop. You'll find, like Jason said, a ton of different shows where we all just talk about comics or the industry or characters. It's a lot of fun. Very, you know, in depth. We go on a lot of tangents. Check it out.
Thanks for joining us, Sal.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And I think that was an amazing discussion with Sal from Comic Pop. I love that we have him on the show. Anytime we have Sal, I think it's a great time. Please go follow him at Sal Says What, SalSayWhat, Sal Says What on Twitter, and go subscribe to his YouTube channel, Comic Pop, on YouTube. It's a great, great channel. And now we're going to move into the honor roll.
Yes, the honor roll is where if you head on over to iTunes and or Apple Podcasts or whatever they're calling it now, and you leave us a 5-star review, we'll read whatever you write.
That's right. Today we have two people entering the honor roll, or as I like to call it, the honor of eternity, or the rock of honor.
Or the teacher's lounge.
Very appropriate one. GHL Ashley and Jason, Gold Standard by Dan Shazam Ross.
Ooh, nice!
From Jupiter Jet to their awesome Patreon content, Ashley V. Robinson and Jason Justice Inman are quite literally the gold standard. One of, if not the most informative geek podcasts out there. Because of their JLA podcast with Mark Waid, double Mark Waid reference.
Heck yeah.
I was able to win a comic book trivia event.
Yes, that's so cool.
Keep on doing what you're doing, guys. Also, please do a Shazam GHL. You are welcome, Dan.
Dan, I'm so happy that first of all, thank you so much for going and reviewing the podcast. It helps bump us up in the algorithm and all that, but I'm so glad that it timed out because we're like almost a year behind in getting to people's comments.
Yep.
I'm so glad.
Worked out perfectly.
That it worked out for this episode.
I hope somewhere in a car or somewhere on a subway train that Dan is just like fist pumping right now. He's like, yeah!
Dan, Jason just punched the mic in excitement.
I was excited
if
for you.
You are
Dan.
Punching the air in excitement. Please tweet us at GHL Podcast and let us know.
Well, the other person that's just as awesome as Dan is PayMars11, who said, I love this podcast. Every episode is interesting. I'm new to comics and it's nice it's nice to learn about them in a structured way with funny hosts and laugh out loud impressions that have the people around me glare when I can't hold back my laughter. I have suggested this podcast to many friends who have listened and I suggest it to anyone who wants to learn more about comics. Well, I think this is awesome. I love that PayMars11, that we make them laugh in awkward places and that they are joining comics. And also Dan Shazam Ross, it's like the fates have aligned.
Truly.
To put you onto this episode. Welcome, my friends, into the teacher's lounge. You can have some of the grapes on the coffee table brought to you, of course, by Professor Bender.
What does Professor Bender teach again?
Storytelling, of course.
Oh, of course.
And mythology.
Yeah.
So go over to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to download all the episodes over there and leave a 5-star rating if you want to be one of the awesome honor students. And don't forget to follow our podcast on Twitter at GHL Podcast. Follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And follow me on Twitter at JAWIIN. That's at Jawin. And Ashley, if they want to suggest future lessons like Shazam, where can they do that?
They can do that at a whole bunch of places, including www.geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or on Twitter at GHL Podcast. There's a bunch of ways to contact us in all of those places. Please tag or contact us through any of the official podcast accounts. If you just tag our personal accounts, it might get lost.
Yes, and I want to give a brief thanks to Queer Femme Romulum, Anthony Russell, at Nightwing_TT, and Drew Stern for suggesting Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
So, really quickly.
Can I ask you a question for hashtag stick around?
Oh, well, okay. I had a hashtag stick around. You know, the part where we make sure you stick around for all our pimpings.
I suspect we'll still get to your question. Do we not have a teaching tweet for Shazam?
Oh, no.
Okay, fine.
I have...
We'll have a mystery teaching tweet that goes up that you guys will have to look for only on Twitter.
It'll be written by Ashley.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about the teaching tweet.
That's okay.
All right.
I didn't know if we'd skipped over it or we were talking.
I had completely forgotten about it, Ashley. I apologize.
That's okay. Is that
the question?
That was my whole question, yeah. This is some real world podcasting. Welcome behind the curtain.
All right.
Please pay no attention to the frog behind the curtain.
My hashtag stick around for Captain Marvel was going to be this.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a question real quick, Ashley. I want you to give your answer as quickly as possible. I do not want you. I just top of your intelligence. Ready?
Okay.
Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Good costume or not? Go.
Bad.
Why?
I just don't like it. It was great for when it was created. It needs an update. Mm. I don't like the stupid shoulder cape.
I think it is a great design. The shoulder cape is weird. But
conversely, Mary Marvel, great design.
I like actually the Gary Frank hood.
Oh, I like the hood. Yes.
I like
I'll
that.
I'll give you the hood.
But I'm still.
That was one of the good New 52 updates.
I almost think they should have kept the chest lightning bolt from the old costume.
Where it's really fat at the top.
Yeah.
I like that.
Because
too.
I think that's a neon glowing thing is the thing that I think is weird.
Which is too much like Black Lightning and the Flash, but in different ways.
Yeah.
So I guess my preferred Shazam costume is the OG body, like the red suit with the fat lightning bolt, but with the hooded cape.
I also love how he has one of the old timey like steampunk where it's the side piece, like it's like on the right side there's buttons down his uniform because it's a side piece.
I like that too. Yeah, it's like
it's
a military uniform.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I knew what you meant.
I have an amazing Shazam action figure, by the way. I need to pull it out. It's old school.
If you follow us on Patreon, we'll put it on the lens there.
All right, cool.
So we will make Jason pull it out of whatever box it's in the closet.
Maybe we should just take a picture of it and put it on the Twitters and all stuff like that.
Maybe.
All right, this has been the podcast. What did you think, Shazam?
What did I think of
the episode?
The episode? It was great.
All right, cool. All right. That's all you need.
You asked me that until after the episode.
Yeah, whatever. I'm just curious. We're putting it off while on Front Street, actually. You know, and make sure to write down the notes of the times. And then also we have to check the audio filters on this one. And then, we should go.
Could
get
you hear me
water.
Drinking coffee on camera? I thought I was doing pretty okay.
I had some iced tea during this podcast if you want to go real Front Street on this one. And I'm definitely going to go to the bathroom
also,
after this one.
Me too. Also, intern Brego, not present.
We have no idea where he is.
We seen
think he
all
left.
Day. I think he
Talkie
might be.
Tony is here, though.
Hello. I think he might be inside the.
Anyway.
If someone wants to draw a fan art of Jason and I as Shazam and Captain Marvel and Brego as Talkie Tony, I will buy it from you.
That's great.
There you go.
We'll send you something great. We'll send you like a free Shazam trade paperback or something.
Yeah, there
like
you
that.
Go.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so this is in it for the magical episode of Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Shazam! Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, and Professor Jason, since you fought through all this publication history, will you please dismiss the class?
Very well, my students. Talkie Tony here to say salutations and keep upper chichin up. The sky is always blue, and Talkie Tony is your friend.